Okay, yeah, very exciting. Ray Berger was very excited that we're doing this. He may join us at some point during this year. Okay, so today we're going to do a story which appears nowhere in the Gemara, but appears only in Rashi.
That's a great story.
So, it's a wonderful story.
Oh, is it the story of Berea?
Yes, that one. Yes.
Good. Okay, so, if you remember, last week we were introduced to Rabbi Meir at the brothel.
We were.
And Rabbi Meir flees, either because of Maisa Shahaya or Maisa de Berea.
Right.
Okay? High Maisa or Maisa de Berea. So, as I already argued last week from Rav Eitam Henkin, the simplest pshat in this Gemara is that all that means is, and this has been argued by other people as well, is high maase means the second half of the story. Maase de Berea means the first half of the story. And what the Gemara is asking is, did he run away to, did he have to run away because the Romans were after him? Or they stopped chasing him, but he was embarrassed because of the, you know, having gone into the brothel, being hugged by a prostitute, looking like he was eating treif, whatever, the way he saved it, right? That it was just embarrassing, right? This is how Rav Eitam Henkin understands it. And again, what drives him to read it this way is several literary issues. In addition to the fact that in the Girsa of Rav Nissim of Karawan, which is the earliest record we have of this, Rav Meir goes with his wife Berea, right, to Rome, which means that what we're about to see in Rashi could not have happened.
So Rav Nissim had in his text of the Gemara this, or he's bringing this down as like some random thing that...
No, in his text, it has that Rav Meir fled with his wife.
Right.
Right, which means that Rashi's text that right. that he runs because of what happens to Berea, meaning she dies,
right?
Can't be shot.
Right, okay.
And therefore he says it must be something else.
Yes.
Right? That's Rav Eitam Henkin's argument. Plus, as we'll see, the story, you know, I'm sort of giving away the end first, but that's okay. Right? Rav Eitam Henkin says, furthermore, the story we're about to read in Rashi is not quoted by any other Rishon, right, which is very odd because they all have Rashi. Right, which leads him to believe, and is only quoted twice in very late Ashkenaz, like in 15th century, which leads him to believe that this isn't even Rashi at all. It is a late, it is some sort of, I don't know, what he calls a Sipur Amami or something, right? Some sort of story that was written in by, it was a legend that someone wrote in their notes that got integrated into the manuscript of Rashi at some point. So he argues it's not even Rashi. Okay, I tend to agree with him that this story doesn't seem to be... It's definitely not pshat in the Gemara based on the best resources we have. And he provides a tremendous amount of evidence that this also isn't Rashi. And several people have worked on this point. But what I want to understand is, let's read the story. And then whether or not it is Rashi and whether or not it happened, right? Kal vachomer if it didn't happen. You got to figure out then where does it come from, right? Meaning a story that emerges that if it happened, you can't ask a kasha na maisa that happened, right? Why do you tell a story that happened? Because it happened. But if a story didn't happen, then dafka you have to ask. Then why does it make sense to tell this story, and what is it trying to accomplish, right? What is the person writing it trying to accomplish, or what's at stake, and whether you think it happened or not? Okay. So let's read this very bizarre story in Rashi. The ikadamri mishum maase de Berea. Shepam achat liglila al shamru chachamim. Nashim da'atot kalot hein. Once she mocked that which the sages had said, that women are flighty of mind. Flighty mind. Va'amar la, and Reb Meir said to her, Chayecha, I swear. Sofach, lohodot l'divrehem. You shall eventually admit that the rabbis are right. V'tziva l'achad mitalmidav l'nasota. Now the Girsa here is a bit problematic. He commanded one of his students to test her l'dvar avera. So to commit adultery. Though in many Girsaot, it's Bidvar Avera. The nafkamina is that some of the achronim try to have apologetics and say that pshat in Rashi is that chas v'shalom, Remeir would never try to get his wife to actually commit adultery, right? And Ad Kedei Kach Ben Yoyada says he sent a castrated student so that there would be no chshash of aveira. It was just to see whether she would be enticed and be willing to do the aveira. But in the better girsot of Rashi, it actually says bidvar aveira, right? Which only makes the kasha more difficult because you have Remeir actually having his wife commit adultery just to prove a point, right? Which is extremely problematic. What? No, no, bidvar aveira.
He wants it.
No, no, but no, lidvar aveira is to
test, as in
test her. So test her, lidvar aveira, to see if she would be willing to commit adultery. Bidvar aveira is
you have like a discussion, like regarding a halakha.
No, no, no. No, no, no. Meaning, we'll see. It's adultery.
What, but why interpret it that way when you interpret
keep
it in
reading,
a way?
Keep reading.
No, just,
keep reading.
Just do the same thing. Exactly. And she, he pressured her for many days until she agreed. Right? Nitratzeit, meaning she was seduced. Right? She agreed to sleep with him.
No, she was pressured into undergoing tests.
What? No. Ukisha nodala.
Right? No,
oh my god. What?
Ukisha nodala, and when she found out about the background, chanka atzma. She hung herself. She strangled herself. The arak Rabbi Meir machmat kisufa, and Rabbi Meir fled out of
Israel.
Kisufa. Kisufa.
Because
of shame. Because of shame. Stop, Ephraim, stop.
Oh my god.
You know very well.
Okay, so here's the question I want to deal with. Why would, what does this story tell you, right? What is the point of this story? Why would, especially if Eitam Ephraim Hengeman is correct, why does someone write such a story, right?
The proof flighty lines, or...
So...
Oh yeah, to prove what they wrote was true, you shouldn't make fun of their words.
A mind?
What?
You shouldn't make fun of the words of the Chum.
Yeah, so why do you tell about Berea?
In shame.
Sorry? Oh, why specifically this one?
Yeah, yes. Oh. Why does this story make sense?
It's been a common thing in their times that these girls were kind of up and starting to take power.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, because you're married. No, not in the times of Rashi, in the times of
Torah.
Okay, one second. Okay, so, Zev, thank you for saying that, Zev. Zev thinks that the point of the story is, this is what Dr. Joel Walowalski claims, is that everyone misunderstands the story. Everyone thinks that this story is meant to teach us something about Berea.
Right.
Right? No. Zev says, no, it's meant to teach you something about Remeir, which is that, right... Remember, as we pointed out before, Rav Meir spent his whole life making fun of people who would give in to Aveirot, and then the end of his life,
he didn't.
Right? He was seduced, and only last minute was saved after the Satan
said,
you know, dressed up as a beautiful woman. He went over the bridge to over the water to get her on a raft, right? And the last moment. So Joel Walowalski says that this is a criticism of Rabbi Meir, right, in how much he was, right, he made fun of everybody else in their inability to withhold temptation, that he was even willing to put his wife to the test, right, simply because she didn't believe that she was temptable. So this is really a criticism of Rabbi Meir, right? Now, many people have pointed out that doesn't seem to be the issue here.
It's a hard reading.
It's a very hard reading. I don't.
Yes, sir. It seems to be to prove that
I don't disagree that it is a possible read.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But
I still think the administering a test is probably the best reading of the.
Okay, but. Okay, do you want me to go through the evidence first, or do you want me to give away the end of what I think is the best thesis, and then we'll build the evidence towards the thesis? Which you want? Okay, good. So, guys, come on. Guys, Ephraim, come on, we gotta get through this. Okay, so, in order to understand why someone would tell this story, especially if you think, like Rav Eitam Hengeman, that this is not the Gemara, and maybe not even Rashi, right, but this was a story that was told such that it ended up in Rashi somehow, right? And even, by the way, if it is really Rashi, right? Presumably there's no Misora for it because Nisim of Karwan doesn't have it. So even if it really is Rashi, Rashi also may have gotten it from a common told story. So often when a story is made up, right? it pulls on elements that are already known. Okay? Now, what are the pieces of this story that give us clues as to what someone might have seen in Bruria's character to tell this story? What does it tell us about Bruria here?
She thought that women weren't all of lightheaded.
One second. Okay. So bad. One is, right, that Bruria challenges Chazal. Right? Challenge Chazal. Right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Right? What else?
She was a feminist.
So was there, you said
that? An olden day feminist.
First of all, she's knowledgeable. People, they don't have to talk, right? She knows Chazal. Right? I mean, those are two factors, right? Yeah, she's knowledgeable, and she
challenges them.
Is a bit and not just she, right? She's can be abrasive about it, right? Like she would fight with her mayor about this, right? Like these are the factors that we know about her. Does this make sense about Bria's personality?
Yes.
Yeah, it really does. Yes, it absolutely does. So, in number one, first of all, I gave you the Gemara in Kiddushin that I mentioned last week. We won't look at it again. That's the one about Rabbi Meir, right? Rabbi Meir giving in to Dvar Avera.
Oh, is okay? The top before where it said they were all of a lightheaded? Is it like connected?
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, the third is right that the specific thing that she's doesn't believe in is that
women are all stupid.
Right. That women's knowledge. Right. Whoa, that women's knowledge is in some sense
inferior.
Is in some sense whatever it means. Right.
It's very posh.
Well, in context, in this version, what does it mean?
That they succumb to.
They're easily seduced. Right. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Right. Not that they're intellectually.
Yeah, they're always thinking about the lightheaded. They're
no. In this context, it really means seduction. Yeah, but
that's called strike.
I think they said about yichud also about having.
Okay. How do I know that in this context it means seduction? Don't give me anything else.
Seduction happened
because this test was supposed to supposed to prove it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's the point.
Yeah.
Right?
It was about like
testing her on a map.
Stop with that, Ephraim. That's not what it means. Okay.
It makes so much sense, though.
Good.
It doesn't say that in the
guys. So let's fine. Stop. It's not what Dvar Avera means anywhere else. Dvar Avera means.
Right. In a matter.
No, that's not what it means. No, it's not what it means. Stop. It's not what it means in Shas. It's not what it ever means. Okay. Let us build this personality about her. Number two. Rav Yossi HaGlili Have Kazil Be'urcha. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili was walking on the way, Ashkechei LeBruria, and he met Bruria. Amar Lot, he said to her, Be'ezu Derech Nelech LeLud. Which way should we go to Lud? He asked for directions. Reasonable thing to ask. What does she say to him?
She kicked him.
No, she didn't kick him. Amar Lot. Amar Lot, Glilai Shoite. You idiotic, you stupid Galilean. Lo kach amru chachamim al tarba sicha em aisha. Didn't Chazal say, don't talk too much to women? You should have said, where Lud? Right? Lud, where? Okay. First of all,
you phrase it like,
is she caustic? Is she caustic and mocking?
What does that mean, caustic?
Yes.
Mocking him.
Making caustic is like sharp.
She called
right?
Me an idiot.
Right? Acidic.
I know what she means.
Yes. Absolutely. Right? Good. Now let's try to understand Pshat in this story. What is Pshat in this story? What is she saying to him?
Don't talk for nonsense.
Don't add extra words into talking.
Does she mean that halachically?
I wouldn't think so.
Good. So certainly Rishonim think that she actually does. The Taj Bates actually says that from here you learn you aren't allowed to say a single extra word to women. Okay? Yes. And Rabbi Yonah says similarly, you shouldn't increase the quantity of words if you could say it more succinctly. Is that Pshat?
No,
I don't think that's Pshat in this Agadata. I don't think that's Pshat in this Agadata at all. Right? What is Pshat in this Agadata? So I'll tell you what. I'll tell you some Pshatim, but I'll tell you which one I like. Okay? Benny Lau says the problem is that. That she was a Talmida Chachama, or Talmidat Chacham, really. Right? It's the student of a Chacham, therefore it could be of men. Right? Talmidat Chacham. Right? And she wanted to be treated as an equal. Instead, she's treated as
a woman,
as maps, right? As a map. And she's insulted that here she gets to talk to Atana, right? And all he wants is directions. So she just gets annoyed and yells at him, right? I don't think that's Pshat. I think
but why
the,
is she telling to... The way he sounds...
Right? I think there's a much better Pshat here, right? And that is, in one key word here, which... Maybe Ephraim will get it and everyone else will miss because you don't know grammar well enough.
Well, the grammar in itself sounds like
Derech Nela. It was a double lush.
The sentence itself was joint
two. Two.
Where, to where would we go?
Thank you, Yosef. Because he doesn't say which way to Lud. He says, which way are we going to Lud? That is a very promiscuous thing to say. Mm-hmm. You don't ask directions to a random woman and say, how do we go? Right? Now, Yesh Ladun, right? We don't know when the story happened. Right? There's two ways you can read this. One is that this is after she's married, in which case it's really inappropriate.
Oh, maybe
she's right? Or Rabbi Clapper, right? Right? Or Rabbi Clapper suggests that this was the only evidence we have of a failed pickup line in the Gemara.
That
Rabbi Yossi Aglili is still single, right? And so is Buria, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, how do we get to Lud? And, you know, she shuts him down.
No problem. She wanted to marry her.
It's such a small difference.
It's an important difference, though.
No, right. It's one thing that's so easy to...
Wait, I'm sorry. If she was single, why is it an issue?
What?
Why is it an issue if she was single? If you wanted a nice Jewish girl to marry, and you found a nice Jewish girl...
She might have just not liked him, so she shut him down. Do you think everyone has a good rational reason?
Sounded like you did some negative idea on the sentence.
It's called getting rejected, Ali.
Yeah, it's called getting rejected. Again,
That's fine. The Gemara makes it seem like he did some problem with saying
you're right, and I'm totally fine saying. I said right. Clapper once likes imagining this is when they were single. This was a rejection of an attempted pickup line. My guess is that the simplest part is she's married, and her point is it's inappropriate to phrase things in such a way to a married woman, right? That's my guess. But okay. But have we built
enough of a caricature?
Character already. Caustic, right? Plays with Divrei Chazal, right? Yes.
Right.
Okay. Same daf in the Gemara, number 3. Buria ashkachte lahi talmida dahave kagaris bilachisha. Buria ran in to a young student who was learning quietly. He was reading with his eyes or whispering, but he wasn't learning out loud. Butchebe, she kicks him. Now, Amarle, lokach kasuv arucha bakol shmara, in arucha biramach evarim shalcha mishtamered v'emlav eina mishtamered. She quotes a pasuk and says, if you don't learn with your whole body, and it's not heard, you're not animated, you're going to forget it. Right? Again, she knows things, and she is caustic as heck. Right? She is a sharp personality. Now, she doesn't just do this to students and Riosek Lili. She also does it, as we'll see in the next two Gemaras, to two very different groups. She does it to Minim, to heretics, and she does it to her husband as well. She is, right? So, number 4. Amaleu mina libruria. A heretic. Now, usually means early Christian, so let's assume that's what it means here. Ksiv rani akara lo yalada. Sing, O barren one who has not given birth. Mishum de lo yalada rani. Should someone celebrate because they are barren? Amrale shatya. Her favorite word. She said,
shut up.
Idiot. Right? As they say in Hebrew. Or in English, idiot. Right? Shvil l'seifei dekra. You don't know how to read Pesukim. Go to the end of the Pasuk. Dichsiv ki rabim minei shom eimam ibni b'ula amar Hashem. The end of the pasuk says, for many are the children of the desolate one, more than the children of the bi'ula, right? The one who has been espoused, right? In English, right? Which means that she has children, right? Meaning, she has children. That's clearly the context, right? This doesn't mean akara literally, because the end of the pasuk talks about her children. Elamai akara lo yalada. It must therefore be metaphorical. What does it mean? Rani Knesset Yisrael should domel isha akara shlo yodam banim glegehenam kavasaychu. It means, celebrate, O Israel, who are barren in the sense that they have given birth to no children who are going to hell, unlike you, who's going to hell. Right? Again. Right? Knowledgeable? Yes. Vitriolic? Absolutely.
What was that word?
Vitriolic.
Like virtue.
No. No, vitriol is like vitriol is like she spits poison. Okay, this woman is vicious.
So like
right?
Zering does an eye roll.
Bidyuk. There you go. Good. Next one. This is to her husband. Hani Birione. there were barbarians, or in certain versions, Haumin, another early Christian. She was bothering, they were bothering Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir was davening that they should die. We've seen this Gemara. Right? So Amrle Buria debitsu. So Buria's wife said to him, "My daidach, what are you thinking? Mishum dichsev yitamu chatoim. What? Because the pasuk says yitamu chatoim that the sinners should be destroyed. Mi ksev chotim. Does it say sinners? Chatoim ksev. It says
sins,
which is actually wrong because it says chatoim, which means
sinners.
It's the difference between chotim and chatoim, depending on where you put the negation, right? Is sinner versus perpetual sinner, right? Someone who's like, but it actually is a noun about the people, but that's not the point. She's playing on it. But this is an actual shot, as you'll see in the Mefarshim, right, on the Pasuk. She said, "V'od shvila sefer dekra, Rishon Odeinam, Kevin yitamu chatoim, Rishon Odeinam, Elo bayrach me'alayah delahadru b'tshuva, rather, you should daven them to tshuva, Rishon Odeinam, then there won't be Rishon, bayrach me'alayah v'hadru b'tshuva." So she he davened for them, and they did tshuva. Again, you see, vitriolic and willing to challenge rabbis, right? Even her husband, Rabbi Meir, right? Which is another factor in this story, right? Right, that she's critical of the way Rabbi Meir does things. Now, Rabbi Clapper does something very clever here, which is that she also implies to Rabbi Meir that there's a better way to, in Yiddish, upschlag v'minim, which is by playing with psukim and humiliating them, because that was what she just did in the previous story on the same daf. Right? Meaning, she also hints at Rabbi Meir that the reason that you get so bothered by these minim, right, if that's the proper girsa, right, and we know, what did the minim usually do? They challenged us to
debates
on Tanakh. And what she's implying, according to Rabbi Clapper, is, look, the only reason you even have this problem is because you're not as smart as I am. I deal with the minim on my own level, right? Look what happened when they challenged me, right? They didn't exactly emerge unscathed, right? I told them that they were going to hell, and they shut up, right? You are apparently incapable of such things, so the best you can do is daven for them to do tshuva, but, you know.
There's really not pshat in the story.
I don't know whether it's pshat, but again, you see, willing to challenge Chazal, right? Willing to challenge Rui Meir, right? Smart, knowledgeable, caustic, right? Those features should come up pretty clearly. Okay.
You can tell our Das was
cop. Or not.
No, I think what Yaakov is saying is pretty pushy.
Okay, we're going to continue.
She couldn't even do the test.
Now there's a Yalkut Shimoni in number 6. That.
What's the third thing saying? Human knowledge is in some sense
inferior.
Yeah.
Mushum Daitan is
Halasama. Number 6. Okay. Now this is, you have to remember, a much less canonical source, right? This is from a very late Midrash. Who is the woman of
virtue,
war,
valor,
soldier's wife,
valor, virtue, businesswoman, whatever it means exactly? Amru, it once happened that Rabbi Meir was davening mincha on Shabbos and his two sons died. Ma asta iman. So what did their mother do? Meaning Buria. Hinicha shnehem al hamita upirsa sadin alayhem.
How do you know Buria was not another one of his wives?
Can you guys stop talking?
No, they had one wife.
I really know of one wife, but the assumption is that this is Buria. Like the assumption all later Mefarshim, this is Buria because that's the only wife we know. Mm-hmm. Right? Most people didn't have multiple, but okay. So. So, she hid them on the bed, and then Rameir came back from Beis Medrash. Amar la heichan shnei banai, and he said, "Where are my sons?" Amar la le Beis Medrash halchol. They went to learn. Amar la tzibiz Beis Medrash lo reisem. He said, "I looked for them in the Beis Medrash. They weren't there. I wanted to learn them between Chamarev, right?" Nasr la koshal avdolah v'hivdil. She said, "Look, man, make avdolah. Just make avdolah." The Chazar Amr La Heichan Shnei Banai. He said, "Okay, where are my sons?" Amr La Pa'amayim. She said they went to the market. They went to this. They went to who knows what.
Wait, why is she hiding them?
What? Oh, to not ruin Shabbos.
What?
Oh. You can't mourn on Shabbos. It was Shabbos. She waits till Motzei Shabbos. They died.
Oh,
He died.
Got it.
He kriva lefanav lechol. So she was about to eat. After he ate, Amr lo Rebbe she'ela yesh lilishal. After he'd eaten and he was, you know, sitting down, she says to him, Rebbe, I have a question for you. Amr le Amri she'ela teich. Said, yeah? What's your question? Amr lo Rebbe, kodem hayom ba echa v'nason li pikadon. Earlier in the day, someone came and he gave me a collateral, he gave me a deposit. V'achshav ba lito, now he wants his deposit back. Achzir lo olav. Should I give it back to him or not?
This was on Shabbat?
Now we're after Shabbat. Now it's after Shabbat.
Earlier today, someone gave me a deposit of money on Shabbat.
That's a metaphor.
Yes. It's a metaphor.
So
Amra la, biti, he said, my daughter, mi she'yesh lo pikadon eino tzarich la'achzir lirabo. And he said, my daughter, whoever has a pikadon, doesn't he have to return to the master? Amar lo, chutz mi da'atach lo hayiti mechazeret oto. Right, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't give it back. Ma'asta. So then what'd she do? Tafsa ato biyado. She grabs him by the hand. Ve'alei ulecheder, brought him up to the room. Ve'kriva oso lemita, brought him to the bed. Natla hasadim me'alehem ve'roshne meitim munachem ala mita. And showed him his two sons dead. Hitchil boche ve'omer. He starts crying. And he says, Banai, Banai, Rebbe, Rebbe, my children, my masters, Banai b'derech eretz, my children, derech eretz, right? B'Rebbe shemi irin einai b'toratan, but my Rebbeim, because they used to sharpen me in Torah. Ba'ota, which is also a nice play in words, because he's Rebbe Meir, right? Who's meant to be Meir at Kol Ha'olam, because according to the Gemara, one place his name is actually Rebbe Neharai, and Rebbe Meir is just a metaphoric name that they gave him. Right, but really, his sons are the ones who enlightened him, and he in turn enlightened all of Klal Yisrael. Nehorai also means light, so it's a play on words. Right, Nehorai means light in Aramaic. But Otasha Amrale. So then, his wife said to him, Rebbe, Lokach Amarteli Shanotshichin Lachzir Pikaton LeRabo. Didn't you have to say we have to give back the object, the deposit to the owner? Kach Hashem Natan Hashem Lokach Yishem Hashem Mivarach. God has given. Right, God hath given and God taketh. May God be blessed forever. Amar Rabbi Chanina, v'davar zeh nichamto v'nitchashva da'ato l'kach ne'amar eshet chayel mi'imtza. She calms him down, and that's why she is the eshet chayel. Now,
so why is this?
In this story, we learn a lot of interesting things. If this is Berea, right? If the story is true, because it's a much later midrash. But what will we learn about her personality? First of all, she's smart, again in Torah, right? But she's also...
Nice.
She also has emotional intelligence, right? We learn, right, that it's not she's not just caustic. She has very good emotional intelligence. Yes, right? What else? So we actually see a very interesting dynamic here, which is... She treats Rebbe Meir as the Rebbe, but who in fact is acting as the Rebbe? She is, and... In classic rabbinic thought, who is meant to be nashi da'atot kala, meaning given into emotions, and who is meant to not be given into emotions? Women given into emotions, and men not. Who here is the one who's crying, and who's the one who's manipulating the situation to make sure that Shabbos is kept, and that people don't cry when they're not supposed to?
Feminism.
Opposite. Yeah.
Bruria. Right? Bruria. Right? Bruria is clearly, right, not only is she branded... That's exactly what you see in this story, right? She has emotional intelligence, but that also ends up putting her right. She has emotional intelligence, which is traditionally, shall I say, feminine, but she also takes the very rabbinic role here, right, which is preventing him from crying on Shabbat, right, which is Yerushalmi in the 15th, right, in the 15th parak of Shabbos, right, Kamuvan. You're all like, yeah, what are you talking about? Yes, it is. It is. Yeah, in Perek Tesvav of Shabbos, you shall me.
How many broken were there?
All depends on Shalom.
Anyways, okay.
There's at least 15 in the year.
Now, two other things to learn about Berea very quickly. Go to 8 first. Tanur, me'imatai taharato. Number 8. Oven, when does it become tahor, right? So this is, I'm not getting to the whole shayla, but a very complicated taros shayla. Who here is an expert in taros?
Yeah.
Good, everyone. Baruch Hashem. It's a very complicated area of halacha. What?
Purity.
Pure.
He's an expert.
Expert. Purity laws are very complicated. So Amar Reb Chalafta Ish Kvar Chananya. So Reb Chalafta says, Ani sha'alti et Shimon ben Chananya, she'sha'al et Binosher Reb Chanina ben Tradyon. I asked, which is, meaning, I asked Buria's brother this question.
Right.
Remember Buria is Reb Chanina ben Tradyon's daughter,
yeah.
Where we learned that last week. V'amar, mishesiyani mimkomo, right, so he said whatever he said, Ubito and Buria Omeret Yivshad and Chalukan. I don't want to get into the two positions, but there's a machlokas between Meir's, Reb Chanina ben Tradyon's two of his kids, his son and his daughter. Kishenimru dvarim lifnei Reb Yehuda ben Bava Amar Yafe Amra Bito Mibno. And Reb Yehuda ben Bava paskins like Buria over her brother. Okay? So what do we learn in this story? That not only is she...
Wasn't there another daughter?
Yeah, so I'm assuming this is Buria, because she's the only one we know Torah. That's why the assumption all these, right, the later sources that this is Buria, because...
Oh, who's your brother?
Another guy. I don't know.
Chanina ben Tradyon. Sorry, Beno Shor. He's not named here. He's the son of Chanina ben Tradyon. And she's the daughter of Chanina ben Tradyon. Fine?
Right.
Assuming this story is about Buria, what do we learn about her? Not only is she smart, she's... smarter than the men.
Right?
She's smarter than the men. Right?
Or in, this man.
Or at least her brother. At least her brother. Right? Or as well. What?
In this one halacha, she was right. I can't
tell. Dumb men against, women.
So look at the next one. Number seven. Reb Simlai also commanded Rabbi Yochanan. Now, in another story, I didn't give you this, but in another story, we learn that this son of Reb Chanan Taradion went off the derech also, right? So he ends up being a very disappointing person compared to Berea.
He's just a bum.
What? Clearly not. He's weighing in on Tarash. He wasn't originally a bum, but eventually he's a bum. Anyways, Psachim Samach Beis Reb Simlai also commanded Rabbi Yochanan Amar Leing Nisli Mar Sefer Yochsen. He said, "Give me Sefer Yochsen. Teach me Sefer Yochsen." Amar Lei Mehechanad. He said, "Where are you from?" Amar Lei Milud. I'm from Lud. Mehechan Moshavach. And where do you actually live now? Right. I mean, where are you from? Where were you born? Or where do you live? Minahar Da.
Wait, wasn't Lud the place where?
Happens to be. I don't think that's a big deal.
Happens to be.
Where are we going to?
Amar Lei. He says, Amar Lei. He said, "I won't teach this to someone from Lud or Naharda. Kal v'chomer, you're from both." Okay? Kaf yev artze. But he pressured him and he said, "Okay, fine, I'll teach you." Amar le, nishnli b'shlar she yarche. He said, "Teach it to me in 3 months." Shakal kala patak be.
He asked Bruya how long she's been for.
Right? What if, he just like rejected him. He said, "What?" He said, "Amar le." And now, think about what he's about to say. He's about to say, "Why can't you do this in 3 months?" Well, ma Bruria de Bitsu de Rabbi Meir. If Bruria, right, he doesn't pick any other Tana, right, as the paradigm of someone who's smart. Picks Bruria. If Bruria, Barte de Rechinim in Tradion, right, the wife of Rabbi Meir, the daughter of Rechinim in Tradion, the Tanya Tlat Mea Shmeitza Biyoma Mishlosh Meir Rabvasa, who learned 300 halachot from 300 different rabbis every day. It took her more than 3 years to learn this book. You think you're smarter than Buria? But who's the paradigm?
Buria.
Wait, so Sefer
Yochsin. It's not clear what Sefer Yochsin here. Some of thinks it means teaching about Mamzerus, and right, meaning teach me halachos of, right, practically, which families are Mamzerim and things like that, right? Others say it's a perish on Divrei Yamim. It's not clear what it means, right? Perish on the Yochsin parts of Divrei Yamim. Right, it's not clear what this means.
Important factor in this.
Yeah.
Okay, so very quickly. The thesis that is presented by several people is that, whether this story is real or not, what is this story doing?
Playing on
let's boil it down. So let's put it nicely.
Trying to take her down and trying to.
Wait, one second. Let's get to what it is.
The highest of women still.
This story does what? It imagines the question, guys. It imagines the question. What if a woman was like us? Right? Meaning Bruria forced Chazal to ask the question, what would it look like if a woman would be a Tana, or be qualified to be a Tana, if the only thing that made her different than a Tana was the fact that she was a woman. Right? Meaning, right? That's the question that it forces you to ask. Right? That Bria's very existence forced you to ask. She is, to put it, right, there's this article by, I don't know who this is, but everyone quotes it. This article by Rachel Levy, I printed it out in like some, I don't think it's an Orthodox journal, where she went through this, but everyone quotes it because the analysis is pretty fair. What you do with it is interesting at the end, right? Whether you use this as a critique of Chazal, that's a different story. But, right, but describing where the story came from is that Bria forces Chazal to ask the question, what would it look like if a woman was a Tana? Or, in other words, what would it look like, right? Bria was the son that Rav Chanina Rav Radu never had, right? Meaning, his actual son was a bit disappointing, right? Bria was the son he never had. And remember, she's married, no, not coincidentally, to Rav Meir, who, as we talked about, is
the greatest of the Tanas of
not the, just the greatest, the one that nobody understood, right? Meaning, like, he was the Tana nobody understood. They never passed him like he was too smart. Mm-hmm. Right? He was too smart, so no one ever...
He must have been really smart.
Probably, right? Now, the question is, what do you do when you are faced with this in a world which is primarily male? Right? So, like, you could imagine that what might happen... So there's a... So Ray Clapper points out that there is a book, a fiction book, that was actually written on the same theme. There's a fiction book that was written imagining what would have happened if Shakespeare had a sister who was a better playwright than him, right?
They would have called her a witch and lynched her, probably.
Well, so in that book, again, I don't think they knew Bria, but what the story they tell is that she keeps trying to write plays, be involved, but they keep pushing her out because she's a woman, so what does she eventually do?
Kills her.
Commits suicide. Why? Because if the only thing holding you back, right, meaning you belong in a certain world, but you're being held back,
you're on the world.
So then, right? What is suicide really saying? Right? What is saying someone commits suicide saying?
They don't belong.
They don't belong. Right? So wherever this story came from, right, what is it getting at? It's whoever put this story together, it's saying, right, two things, right? Two possible things. One is, what would happen if a woman existed in the world of the Tanaim? She wouldn't fit in, and she'd have to be destroyed. Right? Right? And that's, right, she couldn't exist. Right? Furthermore, what's it building on? The fact that, right, the culture itself would be, right, creates difficulty for her and therefore might breed cynicism. And to protect itself, what might the system do? I mean, what's happening? Rav Meir is willing to, right, have his wife be seduced to make a point about Chazal. Why?
Because you need to protect the system.
Because you need to protect the system. I mean, his wife is the challenge to the system. Right?
That's why he married her. Keeping
so,
closer.
So this, right? So this story is imagining that, right? Is, and what therefore is the conclusion of the story supposed to be? If you don't agree with this, if it's not a critique of Rabbi Meir, what is this story?
Critique of the system.
Well, you could look at it a critique of the system, but more likely, it's a claim that in fact such a phenomenon is impossible, right? That she couldn't actually work, right? But now you understand. Right, then what hangs on whether the story being true or not? Right?
Well,
again, if you follow Nisim of Karwan, it's not true. Which means despite the difficulty, despite the irony, she did exist, right? And exceptions can function in the system. Right? Meaning the story was told by whoever it was told.
And they're not an exception.
What?
And they're not an exception.
Meaning, well, that's exactly the point. But you understand that what hangs, Yaakov, what hangs on whether this story is true, right? Meaning, if you want to, right, if you take Rav Mangan's argument that this was a popular story that ended up, you know, by accident getting into Rashi, right, because that seems to be what the evidence points at, right, it's clear that the popular view was that, oh, this can't really be true, it can't actually exist, right? But if that's not true, if Nisim of Karwan, right, remember, the earliest source we have in the story, is right, that means that despite all the difficulties that are evident in the story and that led to this apocryphal story about Bria's death are not true, then that means that despite all the difficulties, it was in fact possible to imagine a Tana who was a woman, despite all the difficulties, and she actually continued to exist, right? That's really what hangs in the balance on that question, right? And since, as Rav Eitan Henkin argues, right, the balance of the evidence points to the fact that the sources before Rashi argue that she's still alive, right? This story never happened. Plus, the story appears in no Rishon except for Rashi, and only is quoted in very late sources, which indicate that it seems to have crept in later on. It seems to, I think he's right, and his father argued the same thing in Shu'at B'nei Banim, and many others have argued this, right? This was a popular version, because Yaakov, it's very popular for people to be very bothered by the notion, right, that a woman could be a Talmidei Chachamah of that level, right, in a primary male world. What?
Wasn't Deborah the third after Yeshua? Deborah was the leader of the Jews.
It's Asniel ben Kenaz. Ehud, yes, third, correct.
So we already have
but, and that's what he says, what hangs in the balance, this is the end of Rav Hengen's article, is that, and he said, he thinks, right, and several people have noted this, that the fact that Ad Hayom, many, right, institutions of women's learning are named for Buria, right, and people name their children Buria, is an indication that despite this version in Rashi, right, there seems to be another tradition within the Jewish community that the other tradition is correct, that such a thing is possible, and while it was once anomalous, it may not always be anomalous. Right? Meaning, Midrashet Lindenbaum, right, which used to be Bravender's, its official name was?
Buria.
Was Buria. Mm. Right? Was Buria. There's a reason for that, as is the high school in New Jersey, right? Because, and that's what he notes, that communally, right, there seems to be a belief in Rav Nissim of Karwan's version of this, namely that it may have once been anomalous, but it was not impossible. It was something that Chazal could actually handle, and that points in a direction that perhaps it can one day be less anomalous. Okay? Good. We have to dive in Mincha.